meeting, the Sadowski Affordable Housing Coalition, which includes realtors and many others, we advocated to pass a 10-cent increase in the property stamp tax to help fund this. And we've seen an erosion of that commitment to affordable housing and to maintaining the dollars for affordable housing and maintaining the trust in the concept. So we feel like it's necessary to come to you all and ask you all to allow people to vote on that to maintain the savings. Because we feel like we created this fund, we created a program, and we funded it with a new tax. And as the need of our state grows and population grows, the need for affordable housing grows, we feel like that's a necessary thing to do, is to put it in the trust fund and to make the legislature make a conscious choice each year whether or not to take that trust fund and use it for a different purpose.
Further questions? Commissioner Morgan.
You know, given the fact that we have it, he's not here, we have former Representative Powell's appropriations, we have Representative Gilmer, and this is somebody else, but okay, so there he is. There's a
I've been devoted.
What I'm wondering is, with this, I'm asking, posing the question to you guys, as it's drafted, my concern is I read it and I think that this now creates two trust funds and the legislature has to spend money out of those trust funds solely for affordable housing. And my question is to you guys, are you reading it the same way? Would this have allowed you to do this stuff that you had done in the past through appropriations process and using that money for something other?
The way I read the amendment, you're absolutely correct. I don't think you'd be allowed to sweep that trust fund the way it's currently drafted. And I think you do have potential issues with it. And I'm against that you still are willing to debate and get into those issues. What we find, the problem becomes mandated it's in the Constitution. I don't agree with it. They have the ability to sweep it. So you might have problems like when I was appropriations chairman without a stamp. But other revenues were down. And so the Affordable Housing Trust Fund generated a much larger yield of percentage than was expected for that trust fund until the excess was swept. And I don't think you're going to be able to do that if this passes. And so you go through another boom year where your revenues are down everywhere except in the property taxes, the dock stamps, you wouldn't be able to sweep that excess if it was more than was anticipated in those programs. And likewise, we have a new constitution that provides you access.
Okay, we're in the question phase. Any questions? You heard questions. Commissioner Gilmer's any questions? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the amendment, it seems to be a difficult provision that requires that it's not be set, but allows the legislature to take this section by law. But I think if you read the amendment, it seems to allow for the legislature to allow it, especially. And then it's probably your question. That said, it's still it's not that big of a problem, obviously. It's not a special
question. Commissioner
Gilbert, Commissioner Gilbert, my problem is with the language following the law. I mean, I think it said the legislature shall have the power to implement the section by law and then take out the to provide part. It would probably address my concern. But it's the to provide part combined with the fact that we shall mandate that these trust funds exist, that I don't think give the legislature flexibility. And I'm not sure in the defining components, and someone can correct me, you know, we just passed potentially a $9 billion, assuming it's voter approved, property tax cut. And if the legislature is supposed to come up with that $9 billion in shortfall, and I think that there's an argument to me that's a benefit to affordable housing. But into this, I'm not sure that they could use sweep money to make up for that shortfall. And I think they should have that flexibility.
Okay, that was we're at the question phase. The CB22, further questions? Let's move to debate. Is there a debate on the issue? Who's the debate? Who's the debate? Commissioner Beck, the debate is ready now.
Sure. Commissioner Hassan, I think I mentioned this in the past. You know, I think your issue is fantastic. I just have an issue. I have a problem with putting trust funds and specific percentages and specific revenue streams in the Constitution. I support your goal of increasing the affordable housing.
Commissioner Carr, you recognize the debate.
Thank you. Over the past few decades, our budget has actually shifted from being about 40% trust funded to 60% trust funded. And the reason being is that smart legislators figured out that if you want to help protect your issue, you trust fund it, so it will go on in somewhat in perpetuity. Hence, the 5-year repeal as well. I think all trust funds should stand in the same stead. It's a great issue, but I don't think it belongs in the Constitution. They should all stand at 3 months after they repeal it. The legislature should have the ability to sweep these trust funds, which I don't think they'll be able to do with this is drafted. Likewise, the one thing the legislature must do every year is to compose a budget. And if they're going to do that, I think they should have all the flexibility they need to do that. If anything, we should be repealing more trust funds to give them more general revenue to let them prioritize the issues that are important to the people of Florida rather than hamstringing them so every time you go into a trust fund, they say, well, that money's meant for this. Well, you know what the reality is? That money came from everybody's pocket. It's for the use of government to run for government. And they should be able to prioritize. If we're going to do this, you might as well create an education trust fund, a health care trust fund, nursing home trust fund, put them all in the Constitution, put them at a percentage that we think is the right percentage, and then even let the legislature draft the budget. I think given the flexibility, this is a great issue. I think affordable housing is important. It's best dealt with the legislature. It's best dealt with so that they have flexibility to appropriate the money that they can afford, and that the market bears, and how it falls in line with the other priorities of the state. I don't support it.
Debate. Mr. Brisson?
Thank you. I understand what Commissioner Corcoran is saying, but let's not be fooled by this. And I guess the issue is a good issue. I'm hearing people say that, you know, we want to create more affordable housing, we want to bring people more into home ownership, we want to create opportunities where firemen and policemen and nurses and teachers can live where they work on in an affordable type basis. What we've tried to do here is, number one, create a fund, trust it so that it's protected. Second, they have a source of monies coming into them. And third, they have those monies, since stop the charade, if the money comes in to use for housing, affordable housing, then all the money that goes into that should come out and be spent on it. The difficulty then is in its application. The difficulty is when it gets in the legislature and you've got a hole or drop in other areas of the budget, can we sweep this to balance it or to use the money to spend on other things? The amendment that I've offered was, in a sense, an opportunity to try to move this and still address the concern of strapping the legislature and requiring them, making them do something. But if we get it passed here and let the people vote on it, hopefully that will give direction to the legislature that this is what the folks want done. Having said that, I'm in a real tough position right now. Because very shortly, I hope to be in this legislative body. And so I'm talking to myself, in a sense. But maybe if we, in Section D, if we put a period after law, in other words, it would be the legislature shall have the power to implement this section by law, period, and get rid of the to provide for state and local affordable housing.
What line do you want for law?
I'm at line 5, 6, 7. After 6 and 7.
On the door or the
amendment? On the amendment. Yes. On the amendment.
Okay.
6 and 7 of the amendment. And maybe that addresses the issue that Commissioner Corcoran.
So, read one more time.
It would be starting at parentheses B, the legislature shall have the power to implement this section by law, period. Okay. And then strike to provide through the next period at the state.
Commissioner Corcoran.
Commissioner, I appreciate what you're trying to do, and I want to shoot straight and not be disingenuous. I also have concerns with being in the Constitution. Even if we did that amendment, I suggest that I let you know where before I stand on the whole picture. And I also think that if we, that's the language that's in the amendment that causes me concern. I guess if I was convinced that it should go into the Constitution, I would strike that language and replace it with some sort of language that says the legislature shall use the funds from that trust fund as they see fit, which I'm not sure is something that's going to be. And then the reason I do that is we passed CP2, and I think CP2 is an affordable housing measure. But at the same time, we've left a huge gaping hole for the legislature for yourselves to try to come up with that if it's voted on by the public. And I think we need to give them the flexibility from that. If there's a tremendous amount of jobs in overseas, they should have that flexibility to use that to fill that $9 billion hole.
Commissioner Gilbert.
You know, some folks are
concerned. The debate phase on this subject.
Yeah. And I'm going to go to the suggestions that Commissioner Saad wants to do on line 6 and 7. It seems to me there are some people who may not want this in the Constitution. Or maybe some people who just simply want to give the legislature the discretion to sweep this trust fund should they want to. And I think, assuming there are people that fall in both categories and not in either but not both, they ought to at least make that change so that they have that option to make the call. Personally, I happen to think that it wouldn't be such a bad idea to give the legislature not simply the discretion, but also put it on the ballot so that at the end of the day, we are aware of what people want us to do with regard to affordable housing. And it's been one of the great concerns I have in legislature since I've been there, and more recently as home values have gone up and rental has gone up for folks, that the affordable housing has really created huge problems in our economy, and not just for the humanity party, but actually for the economy, for the people who want working in your community. So I think it's not a bad idea to put it in the Constitution. Let the voters send a clear message to the legislature and anyone else. But to the extent that there's not clarity, I think to the extent that people aren't clear, there probably isn't clarity. If you just simply take out two provides at the end of that sentence, it'll be very clear that the legislature will have the power to implement it without the discretion that I think Commissioner Sean wanted to give. So I would just urge passage of it with that modification.
We're in debate. Technically, Commissioner Roussan, if you would like to TP your bill and offer up a late file amendment, you can certainly do that. We're under no time gun on these bills, although I hope that we can get any amendments in earlier, sometime last week for members to look at. Saying perhaps we move on to the next bill while if you want to come up with an amendment to this bill that you think will get you the sufficient votes to pass it, I'll let me your call. And I will bring this issue up before the meeting if you want to TP. I'm not TPing it to kill it.
I can't tell.
I'll
TP it to the end.
Okay. But before we finish up today, we will come back to your bill. Let's move on to the next constitutional proposal. CS for CP 26 by Commissioner Turbeville. We're recognized. Commissioner Turbeville.
Chairman, I'd like to CP that proposal.
Okay, without objection, show CS for CP 26 here for postponed. Commissioner Miller, you are recognized on committee substitute for CP 0018 Streamline Sales Tax. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the proposal that we sent to the legislature on March the 18th to request them to adopt language that would allow Florida to participate in Streamline Sales Tax and Use Tax Agreement. To date, nothing has happened to that legislation. And so what I would like to do, Mr. Chairman, is to offer up CP 0018, which has come through the Finance and Tax Committee, and basically put it in the Constitution. Now, if that's what it's going to take for our legislature to act to collect these lawfully levied taxes that are currently not being paid. And of course, with the CP2, trust me, you're going to need every leak and loophole closed. This is a big one. It will bigger and bigger, especially Senator Scott, when you raise the sales tax, people are going to fly to the internet to try to avoid it. So, Mr. Chairman, I think I could
Commissioner Scott, you recognize?
Okay, so we vote for this when you're going to change your vote and vote for CP2, right?
I don't think I
Okay, Commissioner Miller, having presented this bill, I think we've all voted on this issue once before. My first question is there anything different about this than the statutory suggestion we sent forward?
We sent the actual statute to the legislature. This is very about 5 or 6 lines long, and it comes to the filing draft. I put in some proposal going in to accomplish that. I think there's some folks here, Mr. Chair, that would like to say a couple words about this.
Sure. We are on, again, CP 18. Commissioner Turbeville?
I just have one question about the actual language in front of us today. Is there, if at some point in the future the state did pass this and entered the agreement, and at some point the state felt that this agreement was not as beneficial to the state as we would consider or hope that it is, let's say there are other states vote a different way that would disadvantage Florida, does this preclude the legislature or the state from then disengaging from that agreement if they felt it was disadvantageous to the state?
Commissioner Miller, you recognize.
That is a good question, Commissioner Turbeville. It would be not our intent to lock us into it if we need to do a Scrivener's change here. This is simply to get the state to adopt it initially, and then if over time, once Congress acts, and again, remember, Congress has got to act in this. So we're putting it in the Constitution, we have to wait on Congress, or the state could go ahead and join the compact. But as far as the remote sellers that are not currently remitting and they don't do it voluntarily with the statute that we sent, there's nothing that would happen until Congress acts.
Commissioner Corcoran, do you recognize your question?
My concern is that once we have it in the Constitution, that we have to comply with conform our statutes to the other states. Wouldn't that mean that there could be exemptions we currently have that would have to be changed?
No, that is not correct. You weren't here when we had the original presentation. The statute that we sent simply standardizes our definitions. The power to exempt or tax remains with the state, the individual state. It's just that you have the same definitions. You can tax it, for example.
In the summary, Chair,
you recognize
it. It says, as a result of the definitional changes, some items currently exempt from tax may become taxable, and some items currently taxable may become exempt.
What that deals with is that currently under the definition, for instance, food, the way the definitions read, we would have to take a specific action to tax Twixes. You know, the candy bars. They would change that classification because of the makeup, but Florida can't tax that. We can't.
That might be an error.
The reason that certain things would become exempt under the model legislation is the definition of what they are. Currently under Florida law, candy bars are taxed. The definition of food in the model legislation says anything that has flour in it. Well, I don't know if you or your kids eat Twixes. I love them. They're great. They have flour. So technically, they become a foodstuff and are exempt. But we can make exceptions and tax it. The Florida legislature can.
And what I'm saying is, and let's say bottled water, we're currently exempt. But under the definitions of drinks, and other, under the, whatever the current definition is under the stream impact, that could become no longer exempt.
Bottled water is bottled water. Bottled water in Florida is exempt. Bottled water in Georgia may be that, but in Florida it's exempt. It will not change that status. Water is water.
Commissioner Gallagher.
Commissioner Miller, I think we had told this earlier, but what's your anticipated revenue impact from this?
The initial revenue impact is about $47 billion hit to the bottom line of the state budget because of the changes it makes in the way we do rounding. The biggest issue here is we round out four places. This says you round out three places and round down rather than out to four and up.
So is that a positive impact?
Negative at this point.
And what would happen if the legislature adopted it?
If the legislature adopted it, it would still have a negative impact initially until Congress passes the legislation to implement the nationwide compact.
And then the impact of that?
And then it goes positive, very positive.
How positive?
Well, probably, I don't know, $1 billion positive.
One of the reasons I ask is I think that some of the Herodotus, I'm sorry, is not here now. Some notes saying that no member of the Tax and Budget Commission suggested any advice for increasing revenue. This is at least about to increasing revenue.
One of the reasons I was told it was not considered by this session of legislature is that there was too much deficit to deal with, and they didn't want to have to deal with it at this point in time. But as times get better, I think that we'd be well sure to do this. And I'm going to tell you, it's a fairness issue. I don't care whether you buy over the internet or not. This is a lawfully levied tax that is not being collected. This simply tries to put a procedure out there to do it. I think you have even discovered that there is a way to pay the tax if you buy out of state, but it's very cumbersome. This will make it easier for the state of Florida to collect those funds. Plus, it puts all merchants on a level playing field. Main Street merchants today is disadvantaged by having to collect the tax. We don't have any options. You've got to collect it by law. This is a place in the remote, when it's fully implemented, those remote sellers would be on the same footing as a Main Street merchant.
Commissioner Story, you recognize it.
Mr. Miller, you said that it would start out negative, and then after Congress passed the law, it would be positive. I believe some of the testimony we've heard in Tax and Finance Committee, however, said that I think 34 states are moving toward this, that there are some major retailers who, even before Congress acts, will voluntarily remit sales tax. If I remember correctly, and if somebody else was there, please correct me if I'm wrong, that ultimately the $1 to $2 billion, if Congress enacted it, but even the voluntary part could result in $100 to $200 million increased revenue for the state upon our ability to become standardized. Is that correct?
That is correct. We would be joining 22 other states. There are many vendors that are voluntarily complying in collecting tax for those states.
As long as you're part of the contract.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Commissioner Gilbert.
Thank you. I lose your other time. I just have a question for the operation of the actual amendment. It says the legislature shall amend laws to permit entry. Is the actual entry still permissive at this time? And my second and third question is, can you decline to enter? Is that something the executive or the legislative branch will decide? And then can you back out should at a later time you decide it's not the best interest?
The legislature controls as far as having passed legislation to join.
So what will this do if the legislature needs to enter through a statute? This just requires that they amend the laws to permit. I mean, is it still permissive at this point, or does this mandate that the legislature do something that's going to get us as part of this compact?
The intent here, Representative Gilbert, was to mandate that the part of the legislature to pass legislation to put us in the compact.
final question.
Commissioner, you also be recognized.
I hope it does that, because this says shall enable us to permit entry, but I think you got your point across. What about if you want to receive from it at some point, you all or the legislature decide that it's an economic disadvantage to this, or we want to do it a different way? Are we able to receive, or will this require that we maintain our allegiance to the economy?
I don't have a good answer to that. It may be that we need to fix that, but at some point, if we do enter, if it is not something that finally works out, we want to receive from it, I think we should have the right, the legislature should have the right to pass a bill to do that. But initially, we're trying to get them to go in, and coming out is, you would really have to, the contact would have to fall apart before you would want to.
When we discussed this, we really kind of got right away from the constitutional amendment and into the statutory areas. In other words, we talked about, okay, we're going to have them, we're going to prod them, send them a resolution. Now, when you send this over, I don't really know what that contract says. I want to confess, I should have. Extra copy of it in finance and tax, but what does it do, and is it good or bad? And the question I have, the same question that Representative Gilbert says, is what if it becomes bad? What if they say, okay, now we're amending it so that bad for Florida, but good for small states or something, smaller population?
I understand. I share the same concern, and I would not be up here promoting this to go in the Constitution and the legislature decided to act on this. But at some point, at what point are you going to have the legislature ignoring the law, which is collect the use tax that is currently due? It is not fair for the Florida vendors to have to collect tax. Those that are competing directly with them, not taking tax, is just simply not.
Commissioner, question. While I just follow up, is this a specific agreement where it says to permit entry into an agreement? It can just be a few more.
There is a specific agreement that the state of Florida did pass legislation in the past to become a participating state. We have not taken the second step to fully join.
So
we did it halfway.
And this is not an executive deal. This is legislative, has to act on it.
You got to change the law. The sales tax 212 got to be changed. It cannot be done by executive order.
Commissioner McKinney, you recognize.
So, Commissioner Miller, your proposal, and then I apologize if I had to step out and take a few phone calls. This is your proposal, which I think is very good, that will go in the Constitution. So it will be an instruction, instruction manual to the legislature.
Styling and drafting can, do something to it to put it in the right posture and put it in the right place. But this is the intent of what we need to do.
That common sense tells me, as it has for a long time, the last time the Senate passed this was in 2002, I believe. Common sense tells me that this is an excellent idea because everybody owes paid the taxes that they have, and it's wrong collected. So, but from a political standpoint, because you're going to have to wage a campaign to get this passed, just like we're having to wage a campaign to get CP02 passed. Who out there is going to work against this proposal?
There is only one group, and I think they have sent a letter here. Would you name the
straight line, I think?
Direct Marketers Association, the people that directly compete with the Florida vendors.
So the only folks that are going to oppose this, that would raise money to run a campaign, are those that have an illegal competitive edge over our Florida retail.
Correct? That's correct.
Thank you very much. Well, I really wanted to know who was going to oppose it, because I think this will be an excellent in helping pass
CP002.
Probably would. But let me say that when we discussed this at the Finance and Tax Committee, this is one of the true no-brainers this commission had for. This is a no-brainer.
Okay, we'll find out pretty soon.
Can you give us that to Dean Hook?
We're still in question, maybe. Commissioner Corcoran, do you have a question?
Is there a copy of the agreement that we come up with?
I don't have it, but we can get it for you.
I just don't know. What I'm not sure understanding, I just don't understand how power in this agreement can make something that's tax exempt and say now taxable, or now something that's taxed and now not taxable, but something in that language cannot take something that's taxed and make it untaxed and make it taxed.
You see, Commissioner Corcoran, had the state of Florida gone along and participated, this would not be a problem. What we did is we stopped. And when we did not pursue full membership, we let other folks set the rules. This is one of the rules that came out. That flour, anything with flour in it, is considered foodstuff. And under Florida's sales tax law, Chapter 212, food is exempt. So, ergo, whatever has flour in it now becomes food, becomes exempt unless we do something specifically to go back and tax it. That's just one example. There are others. You want to talk about juice? We're currently, you have a, if you'll go into the grocery store and look at cranberry juice, and cranberry cocktail, they're sitting side by side, and my friend over here, Mr. Barnett, will tell you how complicated this is for grocery stores. You've got cranberry juice, cranberry cocktail. One is about 50% adulterated with water and sugar. The other is 100% cocktail. Cranberry juice. One of them is exempt, 100% juice. The other one is taxable, and they'll just like that's under your current law. That's going to change. Also, because the new standard in the compact is a 50% level of juice. So, I mean, we can talk about the minutiae of it, but that's why we sent a bill to the legislature that has all that minutiae.
Members, we have some speakers. How about if we list to our speakers? If we come back to more questions, you can reload your notes and fire some more, and then we'll get into the debate phase and we'll vote this proposal up and down. David Daniel from the Board of Chamber of Commerce. Welcome back.
Lots better this time. We rise in support of CP 18. The members, this is legally owed. These are legally owed taxes that are not being collected in the state of Florida. Florida-based businesses are currently at a competitive disadvantage in the state to our remote sellers. You know, we've heard a lot about the needs of government funding. Well, before we raise new taxes on meridians, let's have people pay what is already legally owed. We agree that it will be a simplification for the process for your remote sellers on what is taxed and what is not. We would encourage the commissioners.
Thank you, Mr. Daniel. Larry Levine. Mr. Levine, welcome to the commission.
Thank you very much. I'll apologize in advance for not being as eloquent as Mr. Miller or David. But my name is Larry Levine, and I am from a company called Brandsmart USA. We're located in Hollywood, Florida. We're a medium-sized retailer. We have about 2,600 employees. And we do about $1 billion worth of business. Remote sales over the internet, mail order, telephone or vendor sales outside the state of Florida are the fastest growing component of the retail business. Even though these transactions are taxable by Florida, the responsibility to calculate and remit the tax actually falls with the recipient or the user and not the vendor, except for people who have brick and mortar stores like we do. In a University of Tennessee study, they estimate that $2.35 billion will be lost in 2008 alone, creating a 6-year total shortfall to the state of Florida of $10.05 billion. We're not just talking about what state and local governments are missing out, it also creating a competitive disadvantage for Florida retailers, I guess. Florida will continue to unnecessarily harm its bricks and mortar retailers, the people who actually live here, and the 1.4 million Floridians that they employ. An additional sales tax, which I've heard a lot of discussion about today, is actually counterproductive. It's regressive. Because as sales taxes are increased, and somebody said, well, just a penny, as sales taxes are increased, sales will flock out of the state to the internet, to out-of-state sellers. And we will lose that revenue. I will not have as many employees, I won't have as much volume, and I will not be as competitive in the marketplace. As you raise taxes, it becomes counterproductive, so that as you expect sales tax revenue to increase with a penny sales tax, it actually doesn't, because we will lose sales. And the Taxation and Budget Reform Commission must put CP18 on the November ballot to ensure the Florida taxpayers are able to keep the type of sales tax system they clearly prefer for the next 20 years. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Levine. Next is Dominic Calabro with Florida Tax Watch.
Thanks, Chairman. Thank you, Commissioners. Florida Tax Watch has studied this issue since at least the year 2000. Every state which has a sales tax has a sales and use tax. What this is about, of course, is remote sales and mail orders that are escaping the collection. It's a tax lawfully but not collected, because the way commerce is conducted just changed dramatically. So in several reports Tax Watch had done, it says to modernize the tax system, to keep a level playing field, to ensure the rule of law, it is the law. We're basically making hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people each year, in inadvertent tax cheats. We have a substantial amount of government needs that we've talked about and heard endlessly here. It's the fastest growing component of the sales and use tax. And structurally, if you don't tax the remote sales, you're beginning to erode the very structure of the tax itself. It puts 1.3, 1.4 million retail employees at a clear competitive disadvantage of no less than 6%, as much as 7.5%. Kind of like having a unilateral disarmament behind our hands, behind our back. We believe that there's a $2 to $4 billion a year, should the Congress, in several years from now, adopt this effort. That's $50 to $60 billion of activity that's invading our markets. It's harming us. So it's good economically, it's good politically, it's the right thing to do. We strongly encourage you to do this. We do want to answer a couple of questions. The Streamline Sales Tax Project does allow Florida to pull out, but if we do pull out in the future, we can't collect the revenue under that system. So they are allowing us to pull in and pull out, and you just suffer the consequences of not being able to collect. All this is because of our U.S. Commerce Clause and two Supreme Court decisions, which actually are thoughtful and correct. We just need to adjust to the times and make sure our tax system does as well, so we can rely on a transaction-based system for most of our state tax collections. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Glover. Brian Pitts. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. It's definitely Brian Pitts and Justice it's a different statutory measure, and I understand what the sponsor said that it was done, but I can understand in the halls of the Capitol right now why they were not to put this up. Right now they're breaking their neck playing around with 212 trying to match up the deficit and fill the budget. Right now also they're trying to make changes to 212 to try to get that budget done. Now you're trying to take something like this, where you're also trying to find limited aspects of revenue. I would see them turning down big time right there. They definitely do not have time to deal with it. One of the biggest issues is what two of the commissioners brought up. What is going to be the impact? What will be exempt, which is not now, which will be, which it does not match up. Florida states does not match up with several things in the other states. So again, what you're saying is one size fits all, Florida will fit into that same category with those other states. Not necessarily so. The other aspect is definitely, which will come out in analysis, also which is not misanalysis. What is the least insanity thing?
what's 3 years, 5 years, 10 years down the line? What's the forecast once we get into this streamline? If it is a negative, when does it begin to balance out? That's the two things finance tech can think about. Definitely got Senator Herodopoulos. Definitely Gelin. Senator Gelin would be thinking about it. So you're not just thinking right now, saying that Senator Herodopoulos. They're thinking aspect, okay, I see right now, but if we do make a mistake and come out negative, how can we come out of this at the same time we're dealing with the deficit? I can see right now in the minutes, we can't think about this right now. We're talking about cutting our agencies. Next, the last aspect on that is if you're going to put an organic law, of course it's mandated. A court will tell you very clearly, especially on the Supreme Court, will be strictly construed. So every word, implication is not going to be the first thing. It's going to be every word that's there. With the land chair, very clear mandate, and definitely there's no opt-out. So they're going to have to figure out and scramble also, hopefully, if we don't come out of the deficit by the time, if the voters actually go through and strike this up. They have to figure out, wait a minute, we can't get out of this now. Because if we interpret this, and our court of Supreme Court is very strict on construing our state constitution. So they look at that and say, that's voting mandate, and they can't get out of it. So y'all might have to figure out how to do this. I don't think we're going to put them in their farm right now. I understand that we have went in halfway. The thing is, they may have saw at that time it was not beneficial to keep going forward. So you really need to think, real thing, there's no forecasting on this, and the changes to exempt and non-exempt issues, the very issues they're trying to do with now on bills, where to find money. And they may say, wait a minute, we have to take a cut from that. Or a bill that just passed and say, wait a minute, we just increased that for the tax. Now we can't do that now because now we're in the streamline. You have to think like they're thinking right now up here, despite the little deals that they made. But now this is still a draft budget. This could cause them a problem, and I can see why they would not take it up. Do not put this in organic law yet until you find out, at least get some analysis, thorough analysis, of what this is going to look like 2 or 3 years growing up. What's the forecast in the future, and what will be exempt, and what will not be exempt? Because we're in deficit right now, and don't know what we're going to come out of. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Pitts. Jose Gonzalez. Welcome, Mr. Gonzalez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jose Gonzalez, Vice President of Governmental Affairs for AIF, Social Issues of Florida. And we are also here in support of CP 18. It certainly is time to look at some options for new revenue. If you've been listening to the debate on the budget, you've heard some not so good ideas about how to raise revenue. And this is at the end of this time that's certainly come. And we thank Commissioner Miller for bringing it up. Thank you.
Thank you. Lastly, we have Mark McCauley. You just slipped back in time. Welcome to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me commend you. You felt very proficient in your hearing. My name is Mark McCauley. I'm Vice President of Government Affairs with the Direct Marketing Association of Washington, D.C. I'll be very brief, but there are 3 points I do want to make. If Florida were to amend its constitution to join the sales tax compact, it would suffer immediate and certain loss of revenue. It would suffer a loss of sovereignty over its taxes, or a highly unlikely action by Congress, which is the only way you would receive any money at all from this proposal. Let me be very specific. I believe Commissioner Miller cited a number of approximately $47 million of certain and immediate annual tax loss due to the change in the rounding rule. There were references to the changes in definitions, orange juice, candy, etc. Let me be very, very specific as to why this is certain loss on a very unlikely gain. For 16 years, legislation to empower the states to tax across state lines has been introduced, and for all 16 years, the legislation has never been reported out of a subcommittee or full committee of the Congress. I worked this issue, coincidentally, for that same period of time. It's never gotten out of committee. And why is that the case? I can't claim it to be, I'm a great lobbyist, that's not it. There's nothing in this for the Congress. They would be passing a questionably popular proposal and not get a single dime in the federal treasury. This is not a popular proposal in the Congress, and yet they would receive no benefit. It's not a good political trade. In terms of sovereignty, I'm just going to spend a moment on this. Our 6 largest states in the Union, California, Texas, New York, here in the state of Florida, the 4th largest, Illinois, and Pennsylvania, none have joined this compact because all of them want to maintain the sovereignty of their tax program. And then my final point is one of how many dollars are truly on the table here. The University of Tennessee study has been cited. It is a pre-internet bubble, as we refer to it, study. It talks in the vicinity of $2 to $3 billion for Florida. Direct Marketing Association did a study saying Florida would lose $300 million. Now, we are advocates on one side. I just ask you, don't speak to us and don't speak to other people. I think nonpartisan people would say there really aren't that many uncollected dollars. And I'd like to close with one final point. Don't simply rely on my analysis as a Washington lobbyist of the unlikelihood of Congress about this. Again, speak to someone who's not a partisan on this issue. I think that will conclude what I conclude, because this is an unpopular proposal on Capitol Hill, and there's very simply nothing in it that a member of the U.S. House or Senate would vote for it. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Power. Okay, that concludes the public testimony, unless there's anyone else that wants to speak. The members are, our court reporter has to have a break. Computers are about to fall off, so we're going to take a break. Hang on now. We're going to come back, and we'll continue the question phase. We'll go to the debate phase. We'll vote this proposal up or down. We'll then go back to CP 22 by Commissioner Bouzon. And then we'll take up, after that, we'll take up CP 0042 by Commissioner Barney Barnett. Let's take about a 15-minute recess.
Danny, it's Garo. What's going on? You know, I did not go into office, but I stopped Friday night to change my shirt in the bathroom, because after I left this legislator thing, I wanted to change my shirt. You know, I just want my hair, but I don't go into the office. So that's all about
I'm
Once you get done with the meeting, it's good.
Thank you.